From our nation's capital, this is Naps Chat.
I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you.
Hi, and welcome to this week's edition of Naps Chat. I'm Bob Levy, the Director of Legislative and Political Affairs for the National Association of Postal Supervisors. Over the past month or so, the Postal Regulatory Commission has found itself in the Postmaster General's crosshair. For obvious reasons, or well, maybe not that obvious, this week's podcast will not attempt to adjudicate the Postmaster General's assertions or weigh in on the Postmaster General's beliefs. Rather, today's podcast is intended to highlight what the U.S. Congress, our elected representatives, and federal law views as the constructive, functional, and expert role the Postal Regulatory Commission plays and has played in informing the public and postal stakeholders of how the Postal Service meets or fails to meet its obligations under the law. The bottom line, as the Postal Regulatory Commission declares in its mission statement, is to provide, quote, transparency and accountability of the U.S. Postal Service's operations. One of the many dedicated postal experts, who is an old and dear friend of mine, is Ann Fisher. Ann serves as a Postal Regulatory Commission commissioner. She was sworn in as commissioner of the Postal Regulatory Commission almost 4 years ago. She was nominated by former President Trump and subsequently conferred by the United States Senate. Prior to joining the commission, Ann spent more than a decade on Capitol Hill in various roles, including deputy staff director to former chairman Susan Collins of Maine, of the Senate Committee on Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs. Ann also served as an economist on the Senate Small Business Committee under former chairman Larry Pressler of South Dakota, and as a government relations manager at the U.S. Postal Service headquarters in Washington, D.C. This is Ann's second visit to Naps Chat. Welcome to Naps Chat once again, Ann.
Thank you very much, Bob. It's great seeing you again. And I appreciate the very warm welcome. And you're referring to me as an old friend. No, but I will just say I did just receive my 30 years of service little plaque. And that was a big deal. And it's been 30 years, and that is a long time. So I guess I am an old friend.
Well, we started on Capitol Hill when we were mere infants.
Yes,
so
yes.
We are old.
That is true. I was 11.
I wasn't that young, but I was young. And let me explore something with you. Many postal observers, including members of Congress, are gratified with the level of postal expertise exhibited by the Postal Regulatory Commission, particularly today. In fact, 4 of the 5 commissioners previously served on congressional staff, and these were staff members who were intimately involved in postal issues and postal legislation. In fact, Commissioner Taub and you were very deeply involved in the development and passage of the Postal Accountability and Enhancement Act of 2006. Do you think such legislative expertise is a benefit to you and to the commission as you conduct your work?
Absolutely, but it's not just the working on the legislation. I think because of my position being this deputy staff director to former Chairman Susan Collins and her being one of the principal authors of the Postal Reform Act, that drew a lot of people to my office, as you and I used to visit then. So people want and need to meet with you when you are the primary aide for a key member working on postal reform. And that was how I learned about the broad array of issues faced by the stakeholders, and also met a ton of people, which throughout my career then, knowing those people in the postal community has been, I'd say, almost the greatest benefit to me. If you need help somewhere, if you need to dig deeper on an issue, I have so many contacts from my time legislatively at the Postal Service and then at my time here.
Also, there's a certain degree of institutional memory that
yes.
you retain.
Yes.
And that that you personally maintain, and as well as Commissioner Poling, who worked on the Senate on postal issues. As I say, Robert Taub has, as Mike Cubillanti, the current chairman, does, as he was a member of the House Oversight and Reform Committee. That institutional memory and knowledge of the players, it doesn't necessarily inform your decision making, but it helps guide you process an analytical standpoint.
Yes. Everything always goes back to the law, and the Postal Regulatory Commission, and what it was called before, the Postal Rate Commission, there's a lot of legal history there. And working on legislation in Congress gave me a very good understanding of how a bill becomes a law. But it also gave me an understanding of how bills that are ultimately passed, and become the law, are done in sometimes not the most perfect way. And for that reason, I do appreciate that we often have detailees that come to work with us on legislation from the different agencies. You really need that technical expertise. But yeah, absolutely. Having an understanding of the congressional intent behind certain aspects of the law is extremely helpful.
Let's talk about one of the laws that you worked intimately on, as well as Commissioner Taub, and that was the Act in 2006. Obviously, increased postal transparency and accountability was among the primary goals of that legislation. With this in mind, the measure recalibrated the relationship between the Postal Service and its regulator, the PRC. What was the congressional intent behind strengthening the postal regulator, and has that recalibration or that strengthening worked?
Yes, I believe it has worked, for the fact that I think back in time to when I was actually working for Senator Cochran at the time, and Senator Fred Thompson was the chair of the Oversight Committee. And that was when we first really became aware of the incredible financial problems of the Postal Service. And I think that was based upon a GAO report. But we had no idea that they were in such financial trouble because of the extreme lack of transparency. And that issue just kept coming up and coming up again over the years. Finally, they passed the act, but the intent on our part was to sort of serve as a check with all this new rate-setting flexibility that was granted to the Postal Service to help prop up their finances. We were there and assigned a lot more oversight responsibilities and an assurance of transparency, accountability through a lot more reporting. So basically, we were strengthened to help serve as a counterbalance to all the new flexibility that the Postal Service was given.
So was the issue, the recalibration came because of the increased authority the Postal Service had in setting its rates. That was one of the areas that Congress really wanted a more empowered Postal Regulatory Commission. I remember asking then the first Postal Regulatory Commission chairman, that was Dan Blair, who also worked on Capitol Hill, a question a couple of years ago, similar questions that I just posed to you, and he believed that the relationship between the Postal Service and the PRC should represent constructive tension. Would you agree with that analysis?
Yes, I would. It's clear through recent comments in the press that the Postal Service isn't always happy with the oversight we provide. But I think they recognize why it exists, and certainly Congress and the American public appreciate or know why it exists. And so even if the Postal Service isn't thrilled with all that we do, or if the feeling that we may slow them down, which I don't believe we do, but still, that is, I believe, a constructive tension. At the end of the day, we all get the job done. But yeah, there's always a little tension going into it.
Yeah, when you reflect about the speed with which the Postal Service thinks it should act versus which it's permitted to act under the regulation, one can recall under the Postal Rate Commission prior to the creation of the Regulatory Commission. Rate cases took upwards of a year.
Yes.
And now it is much truncated, the whole process.
Extremely truncated. The same thing with advisory opinions. Those could take upwards of a year and a half. And I can understand the frustration there on the Postal Service's end. That's, again, greatly truncated.
Now, it's somewhat odd for a lot of folks who study government to have one federal independent establishment on the executive branch, the Postal Regulatory Commission, regulate another independent establishment under the executive branch. So the structure is they're sort of co-equals. They're both independent parts of the executive branch. What makes the Postal Service so different that as a federal government agency, it needs to be regulated by another government agency? I mean, like, we have other regulatory agencies, Federal Trade Commission, Federal Communications Commission, Food and Drug Administration, and so forth, that regulate private sector enterprises. Here you have a federal agency regulating another federal agency. What makes the Postal Service unique in that respect?
Well, you know, when the Postal Service originally came about way back in time, it was purely a public service. But as it morphed and ultimately became the Postal Service in 1970, it was turned into a quasi-governmental, or basically half business, half public service type of entity. But the fact is that it still has a statutorily protected government monopoly on the mail that's covered by the private express statutes, basically your letter mail in general. And this monopoly has been in place since the birth of the Postal Service, Post Office Department, and it remains firmly in place today. And because they have that monopoly, the regulator exists to ensure that as a government entity, the Postal Service doesn't abuse that authority.
Let me come back to something you referenced and you talked about advisory opinions.
Mm-hmm.
Three of the tools the Postal Regulatory Commission can use to fulfill its mission are through so-called advisory opinions, its annual compliance review, and so-called public inquiries. Could you talk about what they may have in common and how they differ?
Well, I would say the advisory opinion and the public inquiry process are both about soliciting a lot of information at base. The advisory opinion process, though, is a far more sort of legal process that you go through, and it must start with the Postal Service. They need to begin the action there and file with us a request for an advisory opinion from us anytime they make a change in the nature of service that impacts the country nationwide. And so they come to us, and it must be at least 90 days before they plan to roll this out. We begin holding a series of hearings. Many stakeholders participate in that, members of the public. It's open to the public. We ask a million questions ourselves, and what this all leads us towards is the commission issues a large written advisory opinion. What I've always explained to people who don't know much about postal is we're sort of poking holes in their plan that they sent over to us, telling the Postal Service where we think their plan's a little weak and it could use some fine-tuning perhaps, or looking at the estimated amount of money that they anticipate saving and telling them if we agree or disagree. So we send that back over to the Postal Service, and unfortunately, it's theirs to do with as they please. I think they take some of our recommendations, but it is their choice to not take any if they choose. The public inquiry process, we begin. And you need a majority of the commissioners to agree to open a public inquiry. And that comes about if there is just an area of postal that we would like to do a deeper dive on or gather more information on that may be more of interest to the commission specifically or more interest to stakeholders. And then we begin soliciting or asking questions of the Postal Service on the issue. And hopefully they respond. People also submit testimony on the issue as well. But that's more of a, it's non-adversarial. it's sort of just an information gathering process.
And the annual compliance review?
That is our annual check of the extent to which the Postal Service is in compliance with the entire law. So that's a tremendous amount of technical work and analyses, yeah.
Now, I'm going to explore the public inquiry facet of the responsibility. And I know that the PRC has opened a public inquiry on portions of the Delivery for America plan. Generally speaking, could you walk us through the process of a public inquiry? How is it initiated? You talked a little bit about it. How do stakeholders and the public participate in a public inquiry? What are you looking for? And is there an outcome at the end of the day when the inquiry is complete? What happens? Does it make a difference?
I'm not going to say too much because we do have pending legal considerations here. But there were a number of stakeholders who had come to the commission or shared with the commission comments that they wished that there was more information available on the Delivering for America Act. And that was when we decided to open up a public inquiry and provide a forum for stakeholders. And I expect we may ask some questions ourselves, but it was a forum for them to ask questions of the Postal Service on the Delivering for America plan.
Was the inquiry on the broad Delivering for America plan? Because I know that the Postal Service did request advisory opinions on certain facets of it.
Yes.
The sorting delivery center initiative was not one of the areas where they asked for an advisory opinion.
Correct.
So that is one of the areas that is currently being litigated, the authority, whether or not the PRC has the authority, doesn't have the authority to engage in a public inquiry. We're not going to talk about that
right.
Clearly because that's under, you know, that's under consideration by the commission. But what I'm curious is, assuming on any other issue, you've done public inquiries in the past
mm-hmm.
on different. You did a public inquiry, I remember, in the universal service obligation.
Yep. Suspended post offices.
In those cases, which already gone under the water.
Yeah.
How did that process work, rather than the current process? How did those processes work?
As far as I recall, most of them were initiated within and out of an interest by the commission. It seems I'm thinking I was staff when we did the public inquiry on the suspended post offices, but the commission at some point became aware that the Postal Service had a tremendous amount of small post offices that had been under suspension for a long time. And we were wondering, I think primarily former Commissioner Ruth Goldway was really wondering why they're not closing these. What's going on? Why are they permanently under suspension? And so we did a public inquiry for that. But that just came out of a curiosity.
We're not going to get into the current mm-hmm. public inquiry. But usually, how long does these public inquiries run for?
They can run. I think you can keep them open as long as the commission chooses to. There is no end result or document that is issued or any findings that are expected to be issued. So,
in the past, the PRC has done advisory opinions with regard to network realignment
mm-hmm.
and so forth. There were a number of them. There was the Retail Optimization Initiative
right.
a number of years ago. There was Post Plan. All items that change the network. Do you have any inkling as to why an advisory opinion was not requested by the Postal Service in the current realignment of its network? Or is this just something they are sort of parsing out generally, and so it wasn't a nationwide initiative?
In the past, the commission has stated that when the Postal Service is basically undertaking test pilots in individual areas of the country, that would not seem to call for an advisory opinion.
Once this, or as this goes on, a public inquiry, this is all on the record, correct? Like,
yes.
The questions, the responses.
Yes.
So the public will be, a public and stakeholders would be able to glean certain information from the on the record requests of the Postal Service and responses of the Postal Service, correct?
Yes, to the extent that the Postal Service is prepared or able to respond to the questions that are asked. That ball is sort of in their court when you raise the questions with them, but that's the purpose of it.
I have a final question. And we're both students of American government one way or another, and we strongly believe, I think, in the free flow of information. It's important to a democracy. And I personally believe that sunlight is probably one of the strongest disinfectants in American politics and in governance issues. How important do you believe the Postal Regulatory Commission and all of its available tools are to ensure that the Postal Service operates in the sunlight, is accountable to the public, and fulfills its primary mission to bind the nation together?
That primary mission of binding the nation together remains extremely important today. I don't know of any other country that has such a vast network or people in such remote areas, whether it's the base of the Grand Canyon, which I actually saw that little post office down there, or islands off the coast of Maine, or highly rural areas where there's just a scattering of citizens. That will always be needed. And for that, you will always have the Postal Service. Americans love the Postal Service. It always has an extremely high approval rate. So despite the ongoing financial struggles of the service and the competitive areas with the new services, delivering packages, etc., I do believe they're going to be around for a long time. But because of the depth of their financial concerns, financial issues, having all of the sunlight upon them that the commission provides is extremely important to Congress and for the public to understand what's happening there, how they're potentially changing their service, because they are. To try and bring their finances under control, they are forced to make some major modifications in how they operate. So we help to provide the transparency there.
With that being the last word, I want to thank Postal Regulatory Commission member Ann Fisher for joining us this week on NAPS Chat. Thank you, Ann.
Thank you so much, Bob. It was good talking with you.
And I thank her legal counsel who's sitting over in the corner giving her, when requested,
Mr. Tim Boone.
Mr. Tim Boone, just weighing in. And I want to thank NAPS Chat listeners for logging on today. If you enjoy NAPS Chat, please leave us a positive review in the Apple Podcast Store. And more importantly, share NAPS Chat with your friends and colleagues. In the meantime, stay safe and stay healthy.
I'm gonna